everyone. I'm going to talk about heating and the dynamics of two flare loop systems observed by AIA and ICE. First, I will briefly introduce the background about flare heating, and then I will talk about the method combining observations and modeling. After that, I will show the results and finally give a summary. Let's start with the standard flare model. In the standard model, magnetic reconnection occurs in the corona and releases a large amount of energy. Released energy is transported downward and heats the atmosphere. The chromospheric plasma is heated and evaporates into the corona. Then we can see bright loops in different wavelengths. In this general picture, we can measure the reconnection rate and flare radiation from observations. But how about the energy release and plasma evolution? There are still some very important but unresolved questions here. So our work focuses on these two processes. We use heating functions inferred from the specially resolved UV light curves in multiple loops to study the energy release, and use a suit model to simulate the plasma evolution in these multiple loops. The model we used here is zero-dimensional Aptile model, which computes the average coronal density and temperatures along the loop. This model is very high efficient in modeling a large number of loops. Here are the equations. Temporal variations of density and pressure. T is the temperature. L is the loop half length. Here we assume symmetric loop. We consider thermal conduction, radiative loss, as well as heating rate. C1 here is the ratio of radiative loss through transition region to the corona. There are only two inputs in this model, the loop half-length and the heating rate. In our study, both of them are derived from observations. From the observed image, we can measure the loop half-length, and the heating rate is derived and constrained from the observed UV light curve. Putting these inputs to the Aptile model, we can compute the coronal density, temperature, pressure, as well as enthalpy flow velocity. From these outputs, we can also get the synthetic UV flare radiation and velocities at different temperatures, and then compare with the observed EUV light curve and the Doppler velocities. In our study, all of the parameters are constrained from observations. Then we look at the observation. The flare analyzed here is a C4.7 flare, which occurred 2011, February 13. We use AIA imaging and ICE spectroscopic data. Here plots the light curves, normalized light curves at different wavelengths. The blue line, the goes soft X-ray light curve, The blue line is the AIA UV1600, and the black one is the AIA 171. The two vertical red lines show the flare onset and the peak time. There are also plot 19 vertical dashed lines here. They represent the 19 scans. 19 ICE scans over the flare region. This is the AIA UV1600 image. The red and blue contour shows the positive and negative polarities. We can see the two ribbons clearly. From AIA 171 images, we identified two flare loop systems. We call this one the first set of loops, and this one the second set of loops. These two pairs of color boxes show the marks the footpoint patches of these two sets of loops, and a series black box tracks the emission along the loop. Each box is 4x second by 4x second, which is limited by the coarse ice special resolution. Actually, there are 49 AIA pixels in each box. So we assume each loop system is composed of 49 individual loops, and the model is the 49 individual loops in our simulation. These are the ice ion 12 intensity and the Doppler velocities. These two sets of loops are also plotted on them. Let's look at the Doppler velocity and integrated UV light curves at footpoint patches in these two sets of loops. Here shows the Doppler velocity in ice multiplies and the UV light curve at north footpoints in the first set loop system. And this shows the Doppler velocity and UV light curve in the second set of loops. Here we can see that the Doppler velocity in the first set loop system shows blue shifts for during the rise phase, and then red shifts in the decay phase. While in the second loop system, the velocity it shows long-lasting Doppler velocity blue shifts here, which maintained about 1 hour during the flare lifetime. This suggests continuous heating. Actually, this is also reflected from the UV light curve. The light curve shows brightened twice, while in the first loop system, it's just brightened once. From this figure, we can see that these two loops, sets of loops show quite different behaviors in Doppler velocity and the UV light curve, particularly in the second loop system. It shows long-lasting blue shifts and twice brightenings, which implies continuous heating. Based on these observations, we compute the 49 individual loops in each loop system. Here shows the heating function. The black line is the observed UV light curve. We use half Gaussian to fit the rise phase and the full Gaussian to be as the heating function in the first set of loops. Well, in the second loop system, about a half individual loops, their UV light curve shows like this, has two peaks. For simplicity, we just use heating functions directly proportional to the UV light curve. Through Aptar model, we compute the densities and temperatures for the 49 individual loops in each set of loops, and then construct the DM. Here shows the DM evolution. From dark to green, it shows from earlier time to later time. In the first set of loops, we can see that the DM is significant at high temperatures during the heating. And in the decay phase, the DM shift toward the low temperatures. While in the second set of loops, the DM distributes along a wide temperature range, and the high temperature emission is significant during the flare time. From the model, we compute the synthetic and synthetic flare radiation and compare with observations. Here shows the synthetic and observed EUV fluxes in three EIA channels. Here, all the solid lines are the observed light curve, including the next slide. And all the dashed lines are synthetic fluxes. We can see that the computed EUV fluxes are basically consistent with the observations. The rise and peak around the same time, and the magnitude are comparable. Particularly in the second loop, the second set of loops, the synthetic fluxes show double peak like observations. And we also compute the ice intensity and compare it with ice observations. Similar to comparison with IA, we can see that the computed UV intensities are basically consistent with the observations. Besides flare radiation, we also compare the velocity with ice observation. Here shows the observed velocity symbols in these ice lines, and the synthetic velocities dashed lines. We can see that in the first set loop system, both the computed and observed velocity agree well with each other. Both of them show the blue shift first and then the red shift in the decay phase. And the turnover from blue shift to red shift around the same time. However, in the second loop system, the model does not reproduce the long-lasting observed blue shift. It just shows a weak and a short-time blue shift. We will discuss this in the last and also summary slide. From above, we can see that the two loop systems show quite different heating and dynamic behaviors. Particular in the second loop system, it shows the continuous heating and long-lasting blue shifts. The comparisons between model and observations are different in these two loop systems, which implies different heating mechanism. The prominent discrepancies between model and observations in the second loop system may be caused by non-uniform heating, especially localized on the loop foot point, which cannot be modeled by APTEL. More likely, it is caused there exists unresolved fine flare strains with very, there's quite different heating profiles. Although with simplified assumptions, the APTEL model is very high efficient in modeling a large number of loops in our study, and its few parameters allow us to constrain all the inputs from observations. And this model has been tested, be valid to constrain the flare heating model and provide reference for sophisticated 1D models. Our spectroscopic velocity diagnostics, on one hand, can determine the free parameters in the model, and on the other hand, can examine the assumptions made in the model. Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, do you think the 131 observed emission is lower than the predicted emission due to non-thermal equilibrium effects?
I think this discrepancies may be caused by the mean temperature and the density approach of APTEL.